On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw on television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
Seachtain, an Indo ascaliger.
Time I mon iroch the yen of chacht er a chorp. Agus suligam a machan sha, gur feidir e a chor in uig kiart len of winter fein.
Skilti, fis, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcuir na meán an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam ag gnám go raibh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orcháir san i lis dúthail agus go minic fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhí ann tar d'oraigh sin, bhí marbh.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dunn Stores cut the cost of Christmas shopping with new lower prices at all Dunn Stores.
Dunn Stores better
for Christmas shopping.
Today on the Indo Daily, the downfall of Ben Dunn. 30 years ago, Ben Dunn, the head of the Dunn Stores supermarket chain, went on holiday to Florida. A hedonistic trip which ended in a cocaine binge with a prostitute that sparked a chain of events which dominated Irish public life for years, destroying reputations and uncovering millions.
Ben Dunn obviously was a man of very large appetites, and he had sent out for a large amount of cocaine and he had ingested a lot of it. He had also sent out for a prostitute from escorts in a flash, and Ben Dunn was arrested.
Take a bucket and fill it with water. Put your hand in it up to your wrist. Pull it out, and the hole that's remaining is a measure of how you'll be missed. You can splash all you wish when you enter. You may stir up the water galore, but stop and you'll find that in no time it looks quite the same as before. The moral of this quaint example is to do the best that you can, be proud of yourself, but remember, there's no indispensable man.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today I'm speaking with Sunday Independent journalist Liam Collins about the rise and fall and rise again of a tycoon. Liam, Ben Dunn, a familiar name still to many in the Irish public, but tell us about the background to Dunn Stores, the Dunn's dynasty, and who Ben Dunn was within the family.
Well, Ben was the youngest of the Dunn family, and I suppose it was surprising that he rose to the top in the family business. His father, Ben Dunn Sr., was a shop boy originally from Ross Trevor, who ended up as a buyer for Roach's Stores in Cork. He then opened Dunn Stores in Patrick Street in Cork, and it was such a success that he moved to Dublin and bought what is now the Cornell's Court shop, which became the flagship store in the Dunn's empire. And he actually, himself and his wife Nora, moved to Dublin. They lived in Jury's and College Green. They left the rest of the family behind in Cork for a number of years. And gradually, the Dunns moved up. There was Frank, Margaret, Teresa, and Elizabeth. Ben Sr. was a peculiar genius. He, as I say, he lived in Jury's and College Green, and later in the Shelburne Hotel. And himself and his wife, Nora, had a bottle of champagne every evening, as you do. And when they were ever approached by reporters, he simply answered, "Dunn Stores, better value beats them all." He never gave any further information or interviews. So what evolved into probably Ireland's biggest retail empire, was also a very secretive organisation. When Ben Dunne died in 1983, it was then that Ben came, Jr. came into his own, and he took over control of the family business, ran it along the lines of his father, which was to, as they said in the business, pack them high and sell them cheap. They spread very quickly across the country to all the major towns. They made forays into England and Spain.
Because of that wealth, though, the family were targets, and Ben Jr. was kidnapped in the early 1980s by the Provisional IRA.
In 1981, Ben Dunne Jr., the supermarket chain owner, was taken on the border by a heavily armed Provisional IRA gang. A priest intervened as a mediator, and Mr. Dunne was eventually released unharmed. It's not known if a ransom was ever paid in that particular case.
It must have been a horrific ordeal, because the IRA were such a dangerous gang. And as we know, subsequently, when the dentist John O'Grady was kidnapped, he had his fingers brutally sheared off with a secateurs. So Ben didn't know for days where he was or what his captors intended. There was efforts made by his family and others to pay a ransom, but the government of the time were implacably opposed, and they followed certain executives in Dunne's. They had detectives follow them to prevent a ransom being paid. Now, it subsequently emerged much later that the developer, Patrick Kavanagh, may have paid £1 million to the IRA. They certainly got something out of it, because they then went on to target Galen Weston, who was behind the Primark or Penny's brand. And as we know, they kidnapped Don Tidy. So it must have been a very traumatic time. He was just found wandering down a country road, and he didn't speak at that time about his ordeal. And it's doubtful if, you know, he ever underwent any kind of counselling or whatever. He was probably debriefed by the guards, but he basically emerged and sunk back into the omerta that surrounded, the silence that surrounded the Dunne stores and their lives.
Did you think of your father while you were being held?
No, I thought of myself. The furthest thought in my mind was anybody else but myself, and just hoped to God that I could get out of this situation.
So throughout the 1980s, Ben Dunne becomes chairman and chief executive of this growing supermarket empire. It all comes crashing down, though, quite dramatically in 1992. What happened?
Yeah, he went on a golfing trip to Florida with about a party of 12 or 14 pals. Some of them were kind of well-known figures. Some of them were worked with Dunne Stores and worked closely with Ben. One of them was his accountant, Noel Fox. They stayed in the Grand Hyatt in Orlando in Florida, and Ben seems to have become detached from the group. And the first indications came back to Ireland about a week later that he had been arrested, that he had an episode with cocaine and hookers on the 14th floor of the hotel. He had apparently been tackled by security men and had threatened to jump into the auditorium. It caused a huge, huge scandal, if you like, back in Ireland, where, you know, it was the first time we had a glimpse of, I suppose, the wealth, the privilege and the lifestyle of one of the most secretive families in the country.
When you were caught with a call girl high on cocaine in Florida, what would your father have thought of that?
He would have been disgusted at the time. He would have wanted to sit down and talk to me. He would have advised me to get help. He would pray that things would turn around, and he would view it carefully.
This is still Catholic conservative Ireland. We have an exotic location, Florida at the time. There wasn't people hopping over and back there. We had a prostitute. We had cocaine. And we had a supermarket tycoon of a family name brand. The reaction at home must have been enormous.
The reaction, it was absolutely phenomenal. And this story, you know, obviously was one of the biggest. There was reporters trying to get out to Orlando, although he then had to go before a judge, and he was sentenced to a month in rehab, but he managed to make sure it was done at home. The story was huge, but Ben Dunn actually played a blinder himself. He came back to Ireland and he did a series of interviews with people, including me, in which he said how sorry he was. He revealed as much details as you asked. And I remember I had good shorthand at the time, and I got a full page in the half an hour or so of I spoke to him. But there was one outstanding thing that I do recall, that he rang me afterwards and he said, could you put in a line saying that I have been very understanding of the failings of other members of my family, and I hope they'll be as understanding about me as I have been of them. And I thought that stuck in my mind all these years, because it kind of, it told us the family dynamic, and that obviously there was a lot going on in the family that was also kept very much under wraps.
Yeah, much like every family in Ireland, there's all sorts of internal machinations that people don't know about. But nonetheless, the family weren't as forgiving as he was citing to you at that time. What happened to his role within the Dunn Stores empire?
Well, what happened is that Ben had become chairman. Basically, Frank Dunn, who was the eldest of the family, wasn't really interested for a number of years in the business. He ran the family stud farm very successfully down in Meath, and he was interested in the horses and all that. So Margaret and Ben, who Margaret was 7 years older than Ben, and they don't seem to have had a great relationship, but Ben's two sisters, Elizabeth and Teresa, sided with him up to that point. Then Margaret moved against him. As I recall, there was a phone call intercepted by somebody. I don't know how they did it, but in which she said, "I hope the little bastard goes to jail." He didn't go to jail. He wanted things to continue as they were in the family empire, but she called a vote and his sister Teresa changed sides and he was ousted as chairman and chief executive, and Margaret Heffernan took over the business.
A substantial check, though, is paid to Ben to buy him out.
Well, there was a lot going on for a couple of months. He was gone, forgotten but not gone, as they say. So he still went into the company headquarters, and there was a famous incident later related that Margaret was having a business meeting with some very important suppliers, and Ben burst into the room and snubbed out his cigarette in her mineral water and said, "You won't get rid of me that easy." The big issue at the time was the family trust. Old Ben had established a very tight trust for the family, which ensured that each of the members had a stake, but it also ensured that it remained under the family control. The big point of most trusts, as we know, is not to pay tax. So the problem for them would be breaking the trust would result in a huge tax burden. So Ben and Margaret Ben taunted Margaret that he had given Charlie Haughey $1.2 million. in gifts, and she decided to find out if that was true and commissioned a report from PricewaterhouseCoopers. In the meantime, both sides had big legal teams and were preparing to go to court. And on the eve of the court case, which we were, the whole nation was eagerly anticipating, they settled. And Ben Dunne was paid £125 million at the time to leave. It was an offer he couldn't refuse. And so he took his shares, and the company basically was left among the three remaining members of the family. Although Elizabeth and Teresa had died rather tragically in the meantime. So it was really in the hands of Frank Dunne, who had returned as chairman, Margaret, and the families of her two sisters.
Now, those payments that you mentioned, though, to politicians, it wasn't just Charlie High. What happened with Michael Lowry?
Yeah, well, what happened is that Michael Lowry was doing up his home down in Tipperary, and his refrigeration company did a lot of business with Dunne Stores. And it emerged through a story by Sam Smith in the Irish Independent that he was actually invoicing Dunne Stores for work that was being done on the family home. This led to Michael Lowry being fired by John Bruton, and it led to the McCracken Tribunal, which investigated payments to politicians. At some point, and it seems it was inadvertent, really, the Price Waterhouse report into Dunne's payments to Charlie Haughey became part of the tribunal remit. And as we know, it turned out that this was true. Although Margaret Heffernan had apparently gone to Abbeville and confronted Charles Haughey, who had actually denied that he got such monies from Ben Dunne.
Former Taoiseach Charles Haughey is to testify before the Dunne's Payments to Politicians Tribunal, his legal team said today. Counsel for Mr. Haughey accepted, as a matter of probability, that £1.3 million was paid into accounts controlled by accountant Des Traynor for Mr. Haughey, but said Mr. Haughey did not know that this money came from Ben Dunne.
What ultimately did the tribunal find? And to add in, McCracken was a swift tribunal, in fairness to him. 8 months long, came out with very clear findings, not unlike what happened subsequently over the following 15 years. So what did Mr. Justice McCracken discover?
Well, he found that in reality, that both the politicians, Michael Lowry and Charlie Haughey, had been availed of payments that were made illegally to them by Ben Dunne. And his conclusions were then handed over to Judge Michael Moriarty. And we had, as you say, the long-running Moriarty Tribunal, which destroyed the reputations of many more political and business figures.
Yeah, so this incident, in effect, involving Ben Dunne in a Florida hotel, we can trace that to basically almost the collapse of the establishment of Ireland and unveiling of everything from Ansbacher accounts to illegal payments and so on.
Absolutely. I mean, it opened up a huge can of worms. It opened up the operation of Des Traynor, who basically solicited every wealthy family in the country to put their funds offshore through his Ansbacher accounts. It was a huge shock to many people that this was going on and that big business had been so closely interwoven with the political establishment. And we do know that when Ben was trying to break the Dunne Stores Trust, Charlie Haughey arranged for him to meet the head of the Revenue Commissioners, Sean Parker, who probably had the meeting, but didn't do anything to facilitate the breakup. It eventually happened, I think, as a result of Ben being paid off to leave the company.
What was Ben Dunn's reaction to the findings and his claims around his understandings of what was happening with these payments?
Well, you know, he said that he made the payments. He eventually, there was three, I think, payments that were made, and that they were related to Haughey's political career. He said that he had been approached by Des Traynor, who was Charlie Haughey's accountant, and was told by Mr. Traynor that he was assembling a group of business people to pay off an overdraft facility of over £1 million that Charlie Haughey had with Allied Irish Banks. And Ben Dunn said, you know, brought in the 12 apostles and there might be a Judas among them, and said he would settle the whole debt himself. And so he went to Kinsealy and he made the payments, and the payments were wired through various bank accounts so that they remained secret for years. And it took a lot of effort by the tribunal to eventually unravel the whole mystery. He also seems to have looked upon Charlie Haughey as something of a father figure. He seemed to have admired his acumen and his political will to get things done. So it was a kind of a complicated relationship as well.
And yet, over the years, Ben Dunn has claimed to tribunals that he wasn't in a good mental state, he couldn't remember certain dealings. How did those kind of explanations play out?
I don't think they really did, because at the time he was running this huge company. Now, he did have, as we know, he had a cocaine addiction issue, and he had the trauma of the kidnap. He could be a very impulsive person. You know, he told me about the cocaine, that it at one time I asked him, and he said it was related to instant gratification. If he was passing a Mercedes showrooms and saw a new model, he would stop and he wanted to go in and drive out in that model. And if they said there's a waiting list, he would tell them, I'm not waiting, I won't be doing business with you. So he got what he wanted, and he said he got the same sort of gratification, instant gratification from cocaine. So it may be that he wasn't in a good place, but he was also running a very big company. He had a lot of very senior advisors, including his solicitor, Noel Smith, who was very involved eventually in the in revealing to the tribunal the payments that were made to Charlie Haughey.
Yeah, that whole episode resulted in the coining of the phrase, thanks a million, big fella.
That's right, yes.
Now, 30 years on, you're still in touch with Ben Dunn. How is he what's he been up to since?
He certainly is in... he started the Nora Dunn Gallery, which was in memory of his mother. He became a very big collector of art. And he bought this famous sketch that is of Michael Collins' funeral by Sir John Lavery, which is actually more than a sketch. It's a big painting. He seems to have admired Lavery and W. Yeats, and he filled his house with a huge collection of paintings. He bought a company called Dunlow House and attempted to go into the retail business for some time. That didn't work, and he went into the Ben Dunn Gyms and has made a very successful business career. Maybe not as successful as Margaret Heffernan subsequently made Dunn Stores, but still on his own, he has done phenomenally well. He is now 73. He says that he is downsizing and he has put 39 of his paintings up for sale with Gormley's and Auction House, and he's expecting to raise about 10 million. So he spends, I think, a lot of time in Spain and elsewhere. But he's still phenomenal energy, and I don't think we've heard the last of Ben Dunn.
And that was Sunday Independent journalist Liam Collins. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode was produced and researched by Mary Carroll, with sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips from RTE News, The Late Late Show on RTE, and independent.ie. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow, and leave us a review.